Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The critics are united. P-Valley on Stars is one of the best news drama series this summer and this year. You'll hear a top reason why when star Brandi Evans joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Where are we heading as the smart TV environment expands the rest of 2020 and beyond? Possible scenarios next half hour with strategist Executive Vice President Joel Cox. Also ahead, a prequel for The Witcher, our new classic trivia question, and your moments praising Regis. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow we televise. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book and much more when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televise. More details later in the program. Nice to have you with us on this Monday afternoon, last one of July 2020. Welcome once again to the program All About Television on a week that we are celebrating the conclusion of our 13th year on the air. Three episodes for you this week. Today, Wednesday, Friday, off this very hour. Great guests all the way, and we invite you as always to be part of the program. All it takes, a phone call from you. So pick up the phone and dial in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And, of course, we have our chat room going at SimonApple04 by name. So if you're shy about using the phone, no problem. Use our chat room, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, other people can be live with you. 92 very hot and humid degrees here in the Big Apple, and Brandi Evans joins us live from P-Valley in Los Angeles after these news notes. A prequel miniseries for The Witcher is a go at Netflix. 6 episodes are planned, dealing with the world of elves set 1,200 years before the event of The Witcher, one of the most popular miniseries of this year. The show is going to be called Blood Origin, and The Witcher executive producer Lawrence Smith-Hendrick, who was on this program back in January, will handle the same role here. Filming will begin soon in Great Britain. Award-winning producer-director Anthony Hemingway has a new production deal with 20th Century Fox Television. Hemingway is to direct National Geographic's latest miniseries, Round of Genius, with Cynthia Erivo as Aretha Franklin, and then will do Washington Black for Hulu, co-produced by This Is Us star Sterling K. Brown. Now before our first guest and quickies, season 11 of Archer comes to FXX September 16th. Soccer star Meg Rapinoe will have an HBO Seeing America conversation special this Saturday night. A subculture of drag racing will be tracked by Vice TV on a new series called Dunk Master. I kid you not, that's the name of the program, Dunk Master. Dunk being the form of drag racing that will be covered, which is very popular in parts of the South. August 19th is the debut. And music star Shania Twain is turning to TV making for her next venture. Twain will co-produce and songwrite for Heart of Texas, a series adaptation of novels by Carrick co-author Debbie McComber. And that is news notes for today. There's no question about it from TV critics. P-Valley, just wrapped up its third episode tonight on Stars, is one of the best TV shows this summer of any kind. The Hollywood Reporter calls it one further, one of the year's best. And Rotten Tomatoes, which gave it a 100% rating, has this to say. It's a stunning lyrical piece of neon noir, all put together by first-time TV creator and showrunner Katori Hall. One of the main reasons why P-Valley is a hit is our first guest. And this is what EW, Entertainment Weekly, had to say about her performance. Stellar, vibrant, compelling. And a Rotten Tomato viewer, this to say, alluring, mysterious, and real. Joining us live from Los Angeles, an AM radio exclusive, Brandi Evans. Brandi, welcome in.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. What's morning here? How are you?
Hey, afternoon here. It works. It works on both coasts. It's great to have you here. Yeah. What is surprising you about the reaction from both viewers and critics to you, to Katori Hall, to your fellow cast and crewmates, everybody connected with the series?
Oh, it's amazing. We knew that we had done something great, and just with Katori's work in general, we didn't know how the world would take it, if I'm honest. So seeing these positive reviews are everything we imagined, but we didn't know we would get it. So we are just so grateful. I know that I can speak for everyone when I say we are just thankful that everyone is taking the time to look at this show from a different eye because it's not like anything you've seen on TV before. So we're just really excited about it.
Mm-hmm. How did Katori Hall find you or you find her?
Oh, my gosh. We almost didn't find each other. I heard about the audition on February 14th, 2018, from our amazing producer, Patrick Ian Polk. So he told me that they were looking for an actor, the black girl that could dance, like do pole stuff and be a good actress. So I tried to send him my friends. I was like, oh, yeah, my friend Danielle's amazing. And I said, well, I've been taking classes at Tasha Smith's acting class, you know, and Richard Lawson. I mean, I could audition. What do you think? And he said, yeah, you should try to see if your team can get you in. So my team, I reach out to them, and they're like, oh, we already tried. You know, they're not interested. So I got a wig. I got a photo shoot done, and I was like, well, I'm not taking no for an answer. So 3 days later, I hit my agent up, and I was like, well, what about now? Do I look like I could fit the description? Because she said, you don't fit any of the description that they're currently trying to cast. That's what casting told her. And so I said, well, what about now? And they were like, sorry, Brandy, we still can't get you in. So 5 months later, I finally get an audition. And that was because of my manager, Miss Debbie. My friend sent me the script, and I wasn't even going to read it. I was like, they don't want me. I actually did not read it. And then she calls the next day. She's like, well, did you read it? I was like, girl, no, they don't want me. I've already tried. And she was like, well, don't you have a manager? Try now. So I finally called Miss Debbie, and Miss Debbie pitched me. She sent pictures of my dad because I'm a PK. So, and that's a preacher's kid. She sent pictures of my dad, pictures of me working with dance teams, all the similarities I have with Mercedes. And I had an audition within 24 hours. So it has been history ever since.
Mm-hmm. Mercedes, by the way, being your character, we'll talk more about that character and some of the interesting relationships she has in a moment. But first, uh-huh. Brandy, one of the special things about this program is that all of you had to put your trust in Katori, who, while she was very well known as a playwright, this is a first-time series creator and showrunner. And we're seeing, by the way, more of that happen, where we're seeing more and more women, particularly women of color, get the opportunity to not only create series and get them on the air, but be in a showrunner or an executive producer position. How much trust mm-hmm. did you and everybody have to put in her and her in you to make it dope?
All the trust. Every bit of trust, there could be no doubt, because it would not have gone like it's going now, which is smooth, in my opinion, because it was a bumpy road. It's a new show, so with any show, you know, you have those new show blues. And then, you know, like Katori has said herself, you know, being a first-time showrunner, you know, she was learning along the way. For me, I didn't know what was new or what was not normal at all in the first place, because I was so new to all of this. So it was, you know, my first experience in being a series regular, but all I knew was that I trusted Katori, and Stars would not have given her this opportunity if she wasn't best for the job. So whatever Katori said, I trusted her, and there was always conversations if we felt like, oh, well, what about Mercedes doing this, or how do you feel about, like, episode two? I said, I would love to wear my natural hair. What do you think about that? And Katori's like, yeah, that'd be great, you know. So it was always a good conversation, and Katori knew exactly what she wanted, and I'm glad that we trusted her because she got it right.
Mm-hmm. Did she say to everybody, not only do I trust you with your characters, but I also trust you to do your own choreography or to really learn how to pole dance, how to be in this club lifestyle, and whatever you come up with, you got my blessing 100%.
Well, she actually brought in a choreographer, Jamaica Craft, who is amazing. Jamaica comes from TV, entertainment world, tour. She's done everything from Sierra to, I mean, you Google her and you see it, you know, Usher. And she's also done television, Empire, and, you know, all of these different TV shows. So this is just what Jamaica does, period, make good TV and good dances for TV. But what Jamaica did was bring in the OGs of that world, as far as like the strippers, our background ladies, they were all either working dancers in the industry or former dancers, to help us make it very authentic. So she brought in So Spider for me, and So Spider trained me for 10 days in L.A. and took me around on field trips at the club out here in L.A. as well, and just taught me how to be a stripper, pretty much.
P-Valley is Starz's new hit drama series. It's on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. East Pacific Time, and we are talking to one of the stars of the show, Brandy Evans. She joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. I'm Samar Vichalabhai. She, creator, show director Tori Hall, the rest of the cast and crew getting sensational reviews, with many critics calling P-Valley one of the summer's best shows, and in some cases, one of the year's best series. And if you have a question or comment for Brandy, don't be shy. Make the phone call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our second of three episodes this week comes your way Wednesday, less than 48 hours from now, at this very time, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Disney Channel has a brand new movie coming out Friday called Upside Down Magic. We will have the director of the series, Joe Nussbaum, and he also has a series as well, Gabby Gabby, on Disney Channel. We'll talk about that too. And then we have what may be one of the most important segments we've done this year. It's all about the world of telehealth on the television set. If you know somebody who really is in need of health information or having a better way to get to your doctor, especially at the coronavirus pandemic time, you want to tune into this segment. We're going to have the head of a company called MedSign, based here in New York, that has come out with a brand new smart TV product that allows you to talk to your doctor through the television set. And that may not be all. The person's name is Tom Conroy, and you will meet him and his company on our show Wednesday. Plus, CBS has a brand new series premiering this week called Lost Resort, the new unscripted show, and executive producer Jessica Sebastian will be with us. It's all coming up Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Brandy, how long did it take you and your castmates to get into the lifestyle of where the series takes place, the strip clubs of Mississippi?
Well, I'm from Memphis, Tennessee, so for me, I was automatically there. You know, I just automatically thought, okay, this is going back home. This is going to grandma's house. You know, just understanding the different neighborhoods. For me, it was very simple because I just remembered everything that I've been around my entire life.
Well, what about your entire life? How much of that did you use as motivation for your character, Mercedes?
All of it. So being a PK, you know, the biggest thing with my dad was I asked him first, like, how he felt about it, because I don't come from this world. So I wasn't the girl that grew up going to the strip clubs or frequented them before this show. So I had to, you know, jump into character with that quickly. And then I, you know, went to talk to my dad because I'm like, well, Daddy, what do you think about this? And he was very open with it. And, you know, he's like, I know who I raised, and this is a role, and you're acting. So Dad was very open with that, which made me, you know, want to be more open with it as well and learn more about it. As far as the relationship with the mom, that I did growing up have a tough time with my mom. I was pretty toxic. So we're not there now, thank God, but I was able to draw from some past experiences and memories in that sense. And then I'm a dance coach. So that's all I've done. And people back home, that's how they know me, is being the dance coach. So in that situation, I don't even think about Mercedes. I just think about Brandy and how I coach my girls. I'm probably way worse. I'm the Bobby Knight of dance. I'm way worse than Mercedes.
And that's part of not only your character, but also in a way the other characters on this series, because as Entertainment Weekly pointed out, everybody has some sort of side business or some aspiration,
right,
of something else they want to do. And in your case, it's actually teaching dancers. It's actually coaching a dance team.
Right. And it's so crazy that it's so surreal to my life. As a former high school English department chair, English of the English department, even when I was doing that, I was still coaching my dance team. So I have side hustled my whole life. Ever since I was 16, I've coached the dance team. So it doesn't matter what I do, if I'm dancing for the NBA. You know, even when I moved to Los Angeles, I was still flying to Japan 17 times I've been to coach my dance teams in Japan or all over the country as well. So I've always had that side hustle with dance team.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the relationship you have with your mother and in your character, mm-hmm. It seems that that's one of the things that the critics have really focused on, is that relationship. And I understand in the episode mm-hmm. coming up this Sunday, that relationship and the whole series takes a turn because of it.
Oh, I just got chills when you said that. Yeah, it's about to get real on Sunday. It is about to get real. I don't think everyone's expecting what's about to happen.
Are you getting fan mail? Are you getting, you know, email, social media reaction, people saying, I know exactly with your characters that relationship is coming from between you and your fellow actress, because I have that similar relationship, or something else you know, popping for me that way.
Yes, you know, most of it has been, we've seen, I see a few comments about, you know, oh, well, you know, the church can be judgmental at times and so things like that. But the biggest comments have been about Mercedes and just playing that role. A lot of the women that are in this industry and doing this as a profession, they're like, I see myself. I got one lady last night in my DM. She's like, I'm going to nursing school, and you remind me of myself, but I actually work in a club too. And, you know, thank you for showing that we have other dreams as well. So there are a lot of comments like that, and that's more important to me. I don't really care to focus on any of the negative things that we're displaying. I know it's the truth, but I love the positivity of thank you for letting me see myself on TV. That means the world to me.
You know, Brandy, it wasn't so long ago that when people saw pole dancing or strip dancing using a pole, people used terms like it's not dance, it's freakish. Mm-hmm. It's posing, and that's all it is. It's not legitimate. It's mm-hmm. weird. And I have to say, I know people in the dance world here in New York who do pole dancing. And one of the things that mm-hmm. I think has changed around, and your show may end up being a lot to do with it, is that people are not seeing this as a freak business or a freak aspect of dance, but they see it as something really beautiful. In fact, EW in their review says it is this: it's celebrating the beauty of the craft without sugarcoating the challenges.
Exactly. Because
what Entertainment Week had to say was that it's breakthrough feats of athleticism without that titillating teases. But that's still the point, is that it really legitimizes it, and it is a beautiful thing to watch.
Yes, and I think people are seeing it differently because, and let's just be honest, I think that a lot of it is because it's shot from a woman's gaze. There are 8 female directors. Usually if we see it, and I love you gentlemen, but men sometimes will shoot this differently. That, you know, it would have been a different type of show had it been a male showrunner and a male directors, because it's shot from what the men want to see, and that's okay. But right now we're showing you from what the women want to see, which is the work behind it, the art behind it, the beauty, the athleticism, you know, what these women are going through beyond the pole and beyond their bodies. So I'm glad that people are able to see the athleticism. Those have been a lot of comments as well. We've gotten a lot of comments about, wow, you know, the core work that must be involved, the arm strength that must be involved. I've gotten very few about my body, which I love, and that's what I was afraid of when I first talked to my dad. Like, I don't want to do this show, you know, to just be showing my body. I want to be acting. I want to be telling a story, and that's exactly what Katoya is doing.
What was the difference that was made by having this series done entirely by women, and in many cases by women of color directing?
The comfortability, the safeness of it. I felt safe enough to say to a black woman, I would love to wear my afro in episode 2. I don't know that I would have been confident enough, or, you know, I would have thought maybe I'll be a little difficult if I ask them, can I wear the afro? They don't see me with an afro. But Katori sees me in every facet, you know, with an afro, with weave down my back, with cornrows, you know, whatever, because she sees me as a person and being beautiful. And it's what we want the world to see us as well. So that's the biggest difference from a woman and a black woman specifically. When you're talking about our costumes, our costume designers are women. So they are making sure that we're covered in every way properly. It doesn't matter if it's pretty, if it's not functional. So Rita and Alita made sure that everything was functional and that we felt comfortable. Like, everything that I had on, I wanted to be like, if my daddy sees this, I don't want him to, like, lose his mind. Like, what are we wearing? How are we looking? Because it wasn't – yes, we wanted us to look beautiful. They wanted us to look beautiful, but they wanted us to feel safe and look like athletes. Katori liked to call us her super sheroes. You know, she wanted us to feel like that. And that's how it feels and comes across.
You're hearing Brandi Evans. She's one of the stars of one of the acclaimed series of this summer on television, P-Valley on Stars. Next episode, number 4, is this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Brandi's with us live from Los Angeles here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Found out we're on from the other side of the U.S. of A, New York, where it's 92 degrees. Second day of a heat wave. By the way, if you're in a heat wave area, please, if you don't need to go out, don't. If you do, take your time. Use mass transit if you can. Check in on your loved ones, drink plenty of fluid, and, of course, follow the mass distancing and all that sort of stuff. And if, of course, you're a commenter on Mindy Nix with Brandi, well, be in doll. Call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, DiamondApple04 by name. 1 week from today, we start our 14th year of the program All About TV's Current and Future, and one of our guests will be in an exclusive interview, the commissioner of the New York City Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, Andel Castillo. TV production is coming back here to the Big Apple. We'll find out how fast and who's going to be doing it. And Ann will let us know about that. And also, what about the future role of TV festivals? When will they be coming back into New York, giving more and more people a chance to break into television? We'll ask Andel Castillo about that. That's 1 week from today when we kick off year 14 of Tomorrow Be Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio Speaker and TuneIn Radio. Brandi, in the first episode, there is a scene where you are going up the pole. I know this is the first time in this club. Mm-hmm. But what happens is, as this is described by Entertainment Weekly, you go up the pole, the audience gets out of the picture, and we just hear you breathing and sort of like getting the tenseness of having your performance be as artistic and, as you said before, you know, as great as possible. And then it shows the performance, and it's totally there. And I'm wondering, what was it like for you to do that scene where you're really – it sounds like you were vulnerable in doing it.
Very, very much so. Well, first I'd like to point out the great thing about being with all-female directors and a showrunner. I picked everyone that was around the stage. I felt very very serious about the fact that it's my body and I choose who will be that close to it. So as you saw in episode 1, there were a lot of closeness. So every single person that's around the stage I handpicked to make sure that I felt comfortable. I spoke with them, you know, kind of watched their mannerisms on set. So that was also a good thing about having women. They understood, you know, I'm in a thong, let's just be real. You know, I want to make sure that I'm comfortable with everyone that's that close to me. So once we got past that, it just felt like I could do whatever. You know, I could have fun and felt free. I felt safe. They only gave me 2 takes to do it, so it was like that competitive dancer in me. It was like, you got 2 shots to get this in, and, you know, and that's all you get. But going up the pole, a lot of the tricks I wasn't supposed to do, Stars wanted to keep me safe, which I'm very grateful for. But that University of Memphis dancer in me was like, okay, I'm a little competitive. I'd already snuck into the studio the night before and practiced with Nico Anand, who plays Uncle Clifford, and practice some of the tricks. So they didn't expect me to climb and do sit-ups and do some of the things that I did, but I did it anyway, and I'm so glad it worked out for safety-wise and made it to camera. But the part where I'm on the ceiling, that's actually so Spider. So I climb to the very top, and then she switches out because by contract I'm not allowed to be upside down head first. It's, you know, a legal issue there. But the other trick Spider taught me how to do.
For people who think this is an overnight sensation, it really isn't. You have been around this world of acting and dancing and choreography for quite some time. You mentioned that you were a high school, you were a teacher at the same time getting a dance, and then you broke in. How did you break in? Why did you decide bye-bye teaching, hello, the dance world?
Life happened. At the time, I just suffered a stillbirth with my now ex-husband. He had been deployed, and I'd lost my job coaching the high school dance team back home after they won nationals. So I just felt like my whole world came crashing down. So I took a title loan out on my car, and I was supposed to just be going on vacation for like 2 weeks with a choreographer by the name of Kenneth, who teaches amazing classes out in L.A. I just come here and dance and, you know, kind of forget about the world. That's what I thought I was doing. But while I was here during that time, I met an agency. I literally crashed an audition pretty much because I didn't have a headshot or anything. Made it to the end. Lied to them when they asked me if I lived in L.A. I told them I was moving, knowing that I'm supposed to go back and teach school in like a week. And then that same week, Kenneth sent me to someone else named Othan, who does Chris Brown and Ciara as well. And I didn't know what I was going to refer. I just knew I was dancing. And she said, "Oh no, this is an audition, and you're booked." And I was like, "Booked for what?" And she said, "You leave for tour at the end of the week, Lil Wayne. You're the opening act." So at that time, my ex had called me. And it was like a water break, and I'm like, "What do you think?" And he's like, "It's like your deployment. You got to go." So I took the job, and I wrote my resignation letter on July 29th, 2009, and I haven't been back.
There's no question Dee Valley is going to get a second season on Stars. And when it does, have you and the rest of the Trangatori thought about, like, how do you want to develop Mercedes in a second season?
No, not yet. And you know what? Katori's probably not going to tell me. And what I that is it allows me as an actor to experience it authentically. I don't even know what happened in the play. As you know, P-Valley, originally the name was Pussy Valley, a neighborhood in Memphis, Tennessee, actually. And Uncle Clifford knows, Nico Onan, where it goes. But then again, things have changed. So we don't know if it's going to go like the play or if she's taking a different turn. I've never asked. And I enjoy living in the moment of just learning Mercedes as she goes along. I have wishes for Mercedes, but, you know, Katori's the writer, so I'm just excited to be that vessel.
Yeah. Before I let you go, Brandy, Primetime Emmy nominations come out tomorrow morning. Anybody you're rooting for?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I am – hold on. I've actually got my list in my phone. So, of course, I'm rooting for Meryl Streep with Big Little Lies. I want Cicely Tyson to win the drama guest actress for Getaway. And Viola Davis, I'm rooting for Regina King. Like, yes, some of my favorite actresses.
By the way, Cicely was the Lifetime Achievement winner for the Peabody Awards this year. And that was a fantastic choice. I've always been a fan of Cicely Tyson's work from East Side, West Side on. And And I still think that she should have won that Oscar for Sounder. And anybody who doesn't think so, just check out the running scene in that movie, and that will be it. You just watch that scene when she and Paul Winfield connect, and it is one of the greatest scenes you'll ever see. And you want to see great acting? Watch that scene. It's from start to finish. That should have been the slam dunk Oscar.
Oh, I love her, and she reminds me of my grandma. So I've loved her since a little girl because she looks like my grandma to me.
Mm-hmm. You can catch Brandy Evans and the rest of the crew on P-Valley, episode number 4. I mean, here is the critical one. This coming Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, created and showrun by Katori Hall. Wonderful playwright, by the way. And incidentally, hopefully maybe at some point, somewhere in New York City, we can have that play here. I would love to see it in the original play in person. Anyway, P-Valley, Sunday, episode 4, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Stars. Check the local listing for Stars available on the air and cable and satellite. And for more details about the film online, go to www.stars.com. That's www.stars.com. P-Valley, this Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Brandy Evans, thank you very, very much for coming out. You, Katori, everyone, congratulations for coming up with one of the year's, no question, one of the year's best TV series. Hopefully next year it may be up for the running for a Primetime Emmy. And no matter what, all the very best for the career from here on forward. It's been a delight having you on.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And thank you for supporting P-Valley.
You're very, very welcome, Brandy. Best to Katori and everybody. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Brandy Evans, star of P-Valley on Stars, joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow with Total Live coming your way, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Are you looking for a very unusual supernatural tale, one that takes place in Chicago? Well, there is one. It's called Peace Talks by an outstanding new writer named Jim Butcher, and you can get it if that's your trial choice. Or Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you listen to them on any device and whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio, and iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audio book for a limited time only, great health and wellness material for you, and a one-month trial with great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. It's a steal of a deal, and it makes a great gift for you or someone you love any time of the year. So how about making today or this week an opportunity to hear for yourself how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. All it takes is responding to audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up next, where are we going with smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and smart TV content? We've got someone with some possible scenarios for you. His name is Joel Cox. He's Executive Vice President of Strategist, a very unusual firm in the world of advertising. And we'll talk to him, and we'll have some thoughts about Regis Philbin and our new classic trivia question. We're going for fourth weekly winner in a row. All that coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio in the galaxy, www.blogtalkradiospeakerandtunein.com. And together they reach over 45 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, tune in radio channel for the coronavirus news channel. Keep in touch with what's going on this pandemic here in the United States and all over the world with original reporting, podcasts, other great material for you. The coronavirus news channel operates 24/7. Tune in radio at tunein.com. Welcome back tomorrow to Live Televised on this final Monday of July 2020. First of three episodes marking the end of our 13th year at the program All About Television. Tom Appleman with you live from New York. Second day of the heat wave here in the Big Apple, 92 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our next guest, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our next guest is Executive Vice President of a very unusual firm called Strategist. And he's joining us live from Denver, Colorado. It's a pleasure to welcome this program for the first time, Joel Cox. Joel, welcome in.
Hello, Simon. How are you today?
Very, very fine, thank you. Joel, first of all, explain what Strategist is and what it does.
Yeah, thanks for asking. My company, Strategist, is a managed service advertising platform that offers customized programmatic OTT and connected television advertising campaigns to our clients coast to coast. We ran the nation, if not the world's first programmatic OTT ad campaign in 2015, and we've continued to be the first to market with what's next in OTT and CTV advertising. We're independently owned, and therefore we're free to partner with any and all data, targeting, content partners, et cetera. That's all very rare in the space. And I mention that specifically because I think that we've had some observations and experiences over the last 5 years that are pretty compelling and telling. So I'm happy to share some of that with you today.
And just to make sure I'm clear about the pronoun, it's Strategist, correct?
It's Strategist, but it's one
strategist.
Of those tomato-tomato
okay,
things, so it's really whatever you prefer. Yeah.
Strategist, got that corrected. And before we get into the smart TV topic, explain your definition of programmatic and how you use it at your company.
Yeah, fantastic question, Simon, and it's great that you're asking because that's going to bring up or enable a lot of the sophistication and enhancement we'll talk about in a minute. But basically, the context that I refer to and use programmatic is essentially the process of transacting ad sales and ad placement via automation and with data. This whole thing is basically a digital auction that occurs in about 115 milliseconds, which is about half the time it takes a human to blink an eye.
You know, Joe, it's very clear that even in this time of a pandemic, that the American public is now firmly making smart TV sets and smart devices their way to watch and use television. They're watching billions of hours of content and apps a month. And more importantly, we are seeing more and more new programming services, particularly from new players, not just from the NBC Universals and Warner Medias and Viacom, CBS of the world. We're seeing a lot of new players put new services, distribute them through smart TV sets and smart TV devices. What do you think about this environment overall? Before we get into a future here, what do you think about this current environment where all this is happening?
Well, I think it's positively fascinating, and I think that we as TV watchers need to understand that this is undeniably the golden age of television content. We're effectively witnessing an arms race of who can win market share in streaming by offering the most content. When you think about what Netflix and Amazon kind of started the whole trend of spending billions upon billions in content, you have players either up the ante or meet the ante, players like Apple. You have others like Fox, who just says, I can't keep up, and sells their studio assets. So I think first and foremost, we as consumers need to acknowledge that, holy moly, there has never been more to watch, right? I mean, just look at the primetime Emmys and look at all of the content that's there and just the variety. Now, the flip side to that is exactly what you've described. It's no longer just the usual suspects. We don't need to just pick from four networks and decide what we're going to watch at 8 p.m. kind of the gift and the curse of this whole thing is that there's now over 200 options for streaming content through your app, through your internet connected TV or your OTT device. And so what we got to decide now is, how do we avoid subscription fatigue? How do we avoid streaming fatigue in general? The pandemic and COVID, really, we don't see it so much as a change agent, so much as we saw this as an accelerant, in that the trends that were already unfolding before us were just accelerated significantly. And as you had pointed out, that has shown a huge migration into American consumers watching more content over the internet, watching it over different hours of the day, different days of week. But ultimately, what we've got here is a situation where there is so much content, it's almost impossible to know what there is to watch out there.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this era of plentiful TV from the standpoint of a service like a Hulu, which has done very well with advertising so far, and now you have Peacock, the latest of the mega programming services. You have HBO Max, which will get into ad support next year, and who knows whether at some point Apple TV Plus, Disney Plus will do something, if not straight commercials, something in the ad realm. How do you see the mega programming arena shaking out?
Well, we at Strategist envision that we're going to see consolidation. The fact of the matter is right now that we essentially have the tech giants asserting their ability, their nearly infinite resources, right? Would you have thought that Apple and Amazon and Google with YouTube TV would be fighting for your attention on your television? Just a couple years ago, that was probably unheard of. But in order to maintain their growth, in order to continue to monetize their audience, this was a natural progression for them. So first and foremost, what you had talked about is the fact that I completely agree. If we're at the point of subscription fatigue, where the average American is, according to our research, likely to only be willing to subscribe to maybe three paid subscription streaming services, that means you very likely got your usual suspects, right? You got your Netflix, presumably you got your Prime Video, and maybe Disney Plus sneaks in there. And so what does that mean? We've got a number of other streaming sources, even backed by significant organizations, you know, Peacock, a product of NBC and Comcast, Quibi, the brainchild of Whitman, and, you know, kind of the people behind that raised billions to get it off the ground. You got HBO Max and their new parents. So we think, unfortunately, as much as we're enjoying this golden age of content right now, it's just completely unsustainable. And so ultimately what we envision happening here is, as soon as it's able to shake out who's able to assert the most dominance in the market share, effectively form a new kind of triumvirate of streaming. Again, my estimation here is we're probably going to see Netflix, Prime Video, and Disney Plus manage to hold on. I think everyone after that is going to be a little bit too late to the game. You know, when Peacock was initially planned to come out, their major differentiator to hang their hat on was going to be that they had better access to the Olympics. Well, the pandemic has completely thrown that out of the window. And so now, does old recycled episodes of Friends have enough gravitas to drive the type of subscribership needed to sustain this thing? You know, the thing is, we look at Quibi, and although it's not completely the same, it's also the most recent kind of new streaming platform to come out, and that's Quibi's effectively toast. So this is going to be a really interesting time, but we just don't see any way that this type of arms race of content development and platform proliferation can continue sustainably. So the question is now, who acquires whom and who gets acquired by whom?
Did you bring up Quibi, Joel? Did Quibi make a mistake by not being a smart TV programming service as well as a service you get on mobile phones?
Gosh, I think they made a lot of mistakes, Simon. I do think that the fact of the matter is that particularly with the pandemic and shelter in place and stay-at-home orders, Americans were spending more time in front of the largest digital device in their household, which is their television, than any other. We see video on a mobile device as cute and niche, but not something that an engaged consumer wants to stare at for hours on end. So while I think that Quibi had a clever idea of being completely mobile and vertical vidi in short form, I just think at this point in time, we as consumers have become spoiled by premium, long-form, professionally produced content. So I think there's a lot of things you can question about Quibi, and not having a standalone streaming app for an OTT and a CTV device could definitely be considered one of them.
Mm-hmm. Before we take a break, Amazon now has an ad-supported service called IMDb TV. And we have heard that they want to make that a home for original series programming. We know, by the way, because we had somebody on from INSP last week, that they're taking one of their most popular programs, The Cowboy Way, and they're running it as a first-run show, along with INSP and with other places, too, both in social media and on the web. What do you hear about IMDb TV? Do you see that as being a major new player for Amazon and their way to get into the ad game?
So, you know, Amazon is just a fascinating organization. You and I could spend a couple hours on Amazon alone, so I'll try and be as brief in my synopsis on this as possible. But Amazon, which is the company that all of us got to know because they deliver our batteries or our toilet paper or our books in 2 days, very quietly built a powerhouse of a streaming platform. And that's not to be even confused or convoluted with their music platform, which is not to be confused with what they did on the monetization side, where Amazon very quietly built a demand-side platform or essentially the piece of technology that monetizes their inventory and their audiences for them. So very early on, we had a lot of interest in working with Amazon because just of the wealth of data that they offer for consumer audience behavior and shopping data, as well as the ability to close the loop on attribution if you have clients that sell products on Amazon. So very early on in Amazon's life cycle for a DSP, we had seen that they had this proprietary slice of inventory called IMDb TV. Now, two things stood out as problematic at the time. Number one is there was really no compelling content on IMDb TV that you couldn't find elsewhere. There were no premiums, there were no originals, right? Just like you had mentioned, they're now addressing. But the other piece is IMDb TV is ad-supported content. And just very quickly, let me just differentiate. So Netflix and Disney Plus operate on a subscription-based model, all-you-can-eat buffet. You know, $10, $15 a month, you watch as little or as much Netflix or Disney as you want. And on the other side of the spectrum is ad-supported. And that's, you know, IMDb TV is a great example of that. Sony's Crackle is a great example of that. Zumo or Pluto TV, which just got acquired by Viacom, great examples of that. So it was curious to us that Amazon would have an ad-supported model, even though the fact of the matter is one of the greatest benefits to Amazon Prime membership, aside from your free shipping, is the fact that you could watch all of this other Amazon Prime Video content ad-free. So there was a curious and an inconsistent juxtaposition for us there. Now, what you're talking about now, the fact that they will begin pushing some of their original and compelling content into that platform, begins to make a lot more sense. We think that subscription streaming platforms, great. Netflix has proven this, right? Stock flirts with all-time highs. Disney Plus follows suit. But we think long-term, with everything I've discussed, subscription fatigue, a battered economy as a result of the pandemic, consumers not necessarily being willing to pay another $15 for all these streaming services, all of a sudden a free ad-supported solution with original content from Amazon begins to make a lot of sense. It diversifies. It offers them, obviously, a completely additional revenue stream for those who are not Prime members. And at the end of the day, all of this is intended to simply get Amazon's teeth further into you as an American consumer. While they may necessarily be breaking even or even losing money on what they're doing from IMDb TV and the original content, Net Promoter Scores, Prime loyalty has actually increased since they've produced this type of content, telling us they're willing to essentially take a loss on content because it helps them with their core business of, in this case, Prime membership and Prime purchases.
You're hearing Joel Cox. He's co-founder and executive vice president strategist, and he's with us live this half hour in Smarter Televised from the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. Simon Appleton with you live from New York. 92 degrees at the top of the hour, day two of heat wave. We're expecting the heat wave to continue till tomorrow afternoon, and then maybe get a lot of showers and thunder showers in the New York metro area. If you have a question or comment for Joel, well, phone call is yours, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our second of three episodes this week comes your way less than 48 hours from now. It's on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, big night edition for you. We've got Joe Nussbaum, director of the brand-new Disney Channel movie Upside Down Magic, premiering this Friday night. We have the chief executive officer of MedSign, Tom Conway, with us. And let me tell you, listen to this segment because it could be a lifesaver. We're talking about the new world of telehealth via your television set. And MedSign, which is based here in New York, has come up with a brand new smart TV product that can allow you, from your home, through your television set to communicate on a regular basis with your doctor, with other health professionals, and maybe a whole lot more. That's Tom Conway from MedSign, or Conroy, excuse me, from MedSign. He will be our second guest on Wednesday. Plus, from TBS's new unscripted series, Lost Resort, executive producer Jessica Sebastian. That's all coming up Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Last week, Hulu, which has done quite well in terms of getting $1.5 billion, I think, with last year and ad sales last year, announced that they are doing a tryout of a new way to get medium and small national advertisers to buy into their service for like $200 a spot. And we know there's a lot of national advertisers that can't afford the big prices of broadcast and cable and so on. What do you think about what Hulu is doing?
Well, you know, Simon, this takes me back all the way to the first thing you asked me. You said define programmatic, right? And I gave you the technical manual definition. And essentially, what programmatic can also do in plain English is democratize video ad placement. It's not a lot of advertisers that have the need or the chops or the budget to run an ad coast to coast nationwide, right? Maybe Ford benefits from running an ad on Modern Family prime time. Maybe Budweiser does benefit from their ads during the Super Bowl. But otherwise, most advertisers in the country need their advertising to be much more specific to their market in terms of geography. And in our eyes, it's absolutely got to be catered to them in terms of an audience. And so what programmatic has essentially opened the door for advertisers to do is serve their ads to individualized households based upon those households' demographics, behaviors, online shopping habits, geography, et cetera. So I think that what Hulu has done is absolutely a step in the right direction. We as consumers have been inundated with advertising over the years. But one of the real advantages we see in the OTT and the connected television space is that despite the fact a consumer may be watching the same episode of House Hunters on HGTV or of Modern Family or whatever it may be, is that now the messages that we get served can all of a sudden be customized, nuanced, and strategically placed in front of me rather than different from my next door neighbor. And so I applaud what Hulu is doing. We think that this is a really interesting position for them to take. We at Strategist have kind of, you know, taken a step further into being much more audience-centric and much more content-agnostic, but we're all for the democratization of making advertising accessible for more local and specific advertisers, especially during a time like COVID.
One of the things we know about both Hulu and Peacock is that they are really getting down into the whole arena of interactive advertising, where you could use interactive ads to encourage people to get more information about a product or order a product through the television set while the ad is running. And we know that because the interactivity now is such that because of artificial intelligence built into a smart set or a smart device like Roku or Amazon Fire TV or Google Chromecast or Portal TV from Facebook, you can order the product with your voice as well as with the remote control. We also saw that at the Digital Content New Front that the Interactive Ad Bureau did a few weeks ago, that Hulu is now launching a branded content division, which they see is very big, particularly when you tie it in with other Disney work, that the Hulu is part of Disney. Crackle is also looking at maybe some interactive stuff, and some other people are too. What do you think of this interactive ad, branded content environment?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the next evolution. That's how this continues to stay interesting. That's how it continues to stay relevant and compelling to the user. The fact of the matter is that the placement of an ad via traditional broadcast cable or connected television takes advantage of sight, sound, and motion. It can be argued that it's the most engaging ad unit in the house just because of the size of the screen. But television advertising's greatest limitation, and this spans, again, from traditional broadcast all the way to what we do at Connected Television, is its lack of clickability and interactivity. When you're on your laptop or your desktop or your phone, an ad can engage with you. You can engage with it. You can click onto it. You can rewind it. You can share it. There's none of that right now proliferated into connected television or broadcast advertising. So we think interactivity is without a doubt on the horizon as one of the next major enhancements. Now, the question about how is it interactive is a really interesting conversation to have. Most recent study by Facebook tells us that almost 9 out of 10 Americans, when watching television, have their phone in their hand. And so we're of the idea, how can you take what you know somebody is watching on television with their eyes and partial attention, and what can we put onto their phone that makes things more engaging? The concept of voice shopping makes a lot of sense. We think that obviously there's going to be a few players that emerge from that, and it tends to be the hardware manufacturers, right? If you're watching an episode of something through Apple TV, Apple's going to own the rails to help you monetize whatever that purchase would be. Same thing goes with Amazon or Google, for example. So what's really interesting is are we going to see consolidation in the space, and are the tech firms who offer the hardware for streaming going to help take advantage of monetizing here? Or is this going to be something where we're using chipset technology to understand what somebody is listening to on their TV to then place a relevant call to action on their phone? You know, the path to completion or bringing to market is much faster if we can make this all happen on a smartphone where it's all app-based and already built out. The tech of making things interactive and connected television struggles because then you're doing it within one ecosystem. As you had mentioned, Peacock explores for theirs and Crackle explores it for theirs and Hulu does it for theirs. Well, what we have then is three completely separate and disparate methodologies and tracking. And at the end of the day, what advertisers want is to be able to seamlessly follow their buyer or their shopper or their consumer from program to program. And we as Americans, we're not loyal just to Hulu or just to Crackle. We reach across all of these different streaming platforms. And so in our eyes, the interactivity that's going to win out of this whole thing is the one that's unbeholden to a specific set of inventory or content.
It's a unified system that everybody can play into.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, we had mentioned earlier, right, this is the golden age of content. There's so much great, you know, Emmy quality content out there. But the one disadvantage to it is, Simon, how many apps do you use to stream content today?
Well, I have an LG. I just got earlier this year an LG smart TV set, my first smart TV. Not yet using it to stream content yet. I'm going to be probably for the end of the year learning how to get my Netflix and YouTube and other services. And, of course, it depends on what the kind of visual service that LG has. But I'll say this. I think there's a lot of interest among the ad community, definitely in interactivity. It's a question of, as you said, people making the first go and also the platforms they're using and whether all the platforms can be part of one big system or one system that has uniform characteristics that everybody can get into. Before we go, Recode, the online website, a few weeks ago broke a story that before the end of this month, Walmart, the nation's largest retailer, and has been looking into getting into television. Remember, it was a year ago they looked at Vudu, which they then sold earlier this year to a Comcast Fandango unit. That Walmart is going to launch a project called Walmart Plus. It's sort of their Amazon Prime Video, and that would have all sorts of Walmart customer services and probably would include video in some fashion. And what's also interesting is that they just launched a summer camp service called Camp by Walmart, where it's video programming using Echo, the interactive video platform that can work with smart TV sets and smart devices that Walmart made a $250 million investment in a year and a half ago. What really was surprising to me is that this was not a smart TV service, that this was done online. Have you heard anything about Walmart Plus, and do you see Walmart being a video player, being a player of some sort in this TV game?
Well, I think that Walmart is one of the few organizations in the world that has the people, the commitment, and the capital to get into something like this. Now, the reason Walmart, in my opinion, is doing this is this is a Wall Street play. It's been very abundantly clearly made with the success of Amazon Prime and all of the other now reoccurring revenue model solutions that simply being transactional with your consumer isn't good enough. You can receive a much higher valuation from Wall Street if your engagement with your customers is a reoccurring ongoing basis, right? I mean, once again, Amazon just proved this with Prime, and now we've got organizations as obscure as Restoration Hardware, a furniture retailer, offering a subscription-based service. So no, I'm not surprised that Walmart is doing this. Sometimes on the success of another organization, Walmart can step in and say, hey, we're going to do that too, without nearly as much risk. And so we are aware of this. I don't envision Walmart to be a significant competitor in the space. I, again, think it's almost too late. I'm almost of the believer that I think it's too late for Peacock, especially without the advantage of the Olympics that they would have had this year. So for Walmart to jump into, doubtful there'll be a player in the space when it comes to streaming, but very likely with the amount of consumers that engage with Walmart on a regular basis, that this could be something that as long as they can get a certain percentage of their overall users to commit to this monthly reoccurring revenue model, that'll win out.
I do think they have a role to play with Echo, their platform. And the question is, when will Echo pull the trigger and become a smart TV programming service using Samsung TV sets, Samsung being a major investor? You mentioned Restoration Hardware. Are you saying the Restoration Hardware has a service and they're looking to get in TV programming in some way? You sort of caught me off guard there.
Yeah, no. So I had mentioned Restoration Hardware in the context of the fact that they have a reoccurring revenue model. They basically have a membership, a subscription that you can pay that just gets you a discount. So nothing to do with the TV space. But much like Amazon Prime and much like Walmart Plus, it's really just about getting your consumers to give you some of their money every year for, you know, an ongoing rather than a transactional type relationship. So I apologize if I wasn't clear on that initially.
Okay. Well, we're happy we got it clarified. Before we go, just like we did with Brandy, primetime Emmy nominations come out tomorrow morning. Anybody you're rooting for?
Yeah, I think season 3 of Ozark was one of the most compelling streaming shows I've watched in years. So I'll certainly be rooting for Ozark. And I'm a big fan of Bob Odenkirk and the work he's been doing in Better Call Saul. So those are the two that I have my eyes on and that I'm rooting for.
By the way, Primetime Emmy Award nomination of Finger will be coming out at 8:30 Eastern Time during Good Morning America on ABC, on your local ABC station. And then, of course, the Primetime Emmy hosted by Jimmy Kimmel will be either live or virtual in September. And we will, by the way, have Emmy coverage tomorrow on my Twitter page at ABC Simon TWBT. And we hope to follow up with some segments later on in the week. We'll try to invite a TV critic or two maybe on Friday's show to talk about the Primetime Emmy nominations, who got in, and who did not. If you want to know more about Stratus and what it is up to in the world of TV advertising and programmatic ads, here's where you go online. It is strategus.com. It's S-T-R-A-T-E-G-U-S, strategus.com. Joe Cox, co-founder, executive vice president of that firm, thank you again for joining us from the Mile High City. Pleasure to have you aboard. Let's have you back soon, and all the very best to you and your firm this week and the rest of 2020.
Hey, thanks so much, Simon. It's a real pleasure to be with you today.
Absolutely. Take care. Enjoy the week.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Joe Cox, co-founder and executive vice president of Stratus, joining us live from Denver, Colorado. And now it's time for our classic trivia question segment, and we are going for an unprecedented fourth weekly winner in a row. So far this month, we've had winners from Georgia, Jersey City, New Jersey, and then last week from Roslyn, Long Island, New York. Let's see if we get a fourth one. And that fourth one will win if they get the correct answer. The Discovery's new real-life sticker book, Ocean Oriented. And, of course, it fits well with Shark Week happening, I believe, this week on Discovery Channel. Plus, the TV original book, How We Live on Mars by Stephen L. Petrenic. And the question is simple. Name the theme song of Who's the Boss? Name the theme song of Who's the Boss? That, of course, the very popular ABC comedy starring Tony Danza. And Judith Life ran for 8 years, I believe, from 1984 to 1992. One of those popular shows, one of those popular sitcoms on TV during the 80s. Once again, name the theme song of Who's the Boss, and we want an exact answer. By the way, it was written by the creators of the show. And it was actually sung three times in different ways over the course of the program's run. Name the theme song of Who's the Boss. Exact answer. If you first with the correct answer, we will send you How to Live on Mars, the TV book by Stephen Petrenic, and Discovery's brand-new real-life sticker book, Ocean, with more than 400 stickers. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your full name and your full mailing address. And if you do, we'll send the prizes right to you. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on my Facebook page, Simon Applebaum, and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's the UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so. That's how we had our last three winners over the course of the last 3 weeks, and we can do it again this week. It all depends on you. By the way, if you've won before, let somebody else win and have the prizes, okay? So let's see if we can get winner number four before the end of this week, maybe for the end of today. You know how. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Get in the game today, and all the very best. And now before we leave you, we have some final thoughts about someone who is very special in the world of television. We are going to go beyond our normal hour, so for those of you that may be coming in at 4 o'clock, we're happy you're aboard. Welcome to the Marvie Televised at near the top of the hour. Simon Apple, I'm with you live from New York. We've had a great show today, and again, I want to thank my guest, Brady Evans, the star of P-Valley on Starz, and Bill Cox, Stratus's co-founder and executive vice president. In recent weeks, we and the rest of the world have said goodbye to some major entertainment giants who really made television very special because of their contribution. Carl Reiner, the great sketch comedy star, writer-producer, the creator of the Dick Van Dyke Show, and Hugh Downs, one of the best communicators that TV ever had, whose credits include everything from hosting the Today program and the game show Concentration to anchoring 2020 with Barbara Walters for nearly two decades. On Friday, Regis Philbin passed away, 1 month short of his 89th birthday, from natural causes. Regis Philbin, for a lot of people, may be the ultimate TV comeback story. Because in the 1960s, it looked like Regis Philbin was going to break out as a television personality on the national level. After 2 years of hosting a talk show in San Diego, by which he really put together the format for what he would do later on, particularly the idea of a host chat, where either solo or with his co-host, Regis would comment on the news of the day, what happened to him the previous 24 hours, and so on and so on and so forth. Westinghouse Broadcasting Group W loved what he did and decided to give him a shot, especially when their famous syndicated talk show host, the great Steve Allen, decided to hang it up after several years in syndication. That Regis Philbin show was born in 1964. I know the WPX TV Channel 11 in New York ran it. It had some good things about it, including the host. And unfortunately, so much love for Steve Allen, very little love for Regis Philbin, especially a lot of people didn't know where he came from. And within a few months, that Regis Philbin show was that off the air. Then in 1967, Philbin got another national break with ABC to be the sidekick of Joey Bishop in his late-night Joey Bishop show. That gig for 2 years. Unfortunately, ABC didn't have what it took to make it a long-running deal, and Joey left the air with Regis in 1969. Once again, Regis had to go back to local television to prove himself, and he did. He did everything he could do at KBC TV in Los Angeles. At one point, he was even the movie critic there. And then in the early 70s, he got his shot again of being the host of AM Los Angeles. He was the co-host, and within months, he took that show from being a day end for that station and made it the number one morning talk program in that city, and a long-running number one. So much so that NBC in the early 80s gave him another chance to be the comeback kid in national television. He and, believe it or not, Larry Hart, later with Entertainment Tonight, co-hosted a half-hour talk show on NBC, 10 a.m. Monday through Friday. Despite good reviews and Regis doing that host chat, didn't get the audience and didn't get it immediately. So once again, you got to go back to local television in L.A. A couple of years later, WABC-TV here in New York gave Regis the chance to break in here with the morning show, 9 a.m. program. He and Cindy Garvey would ultimately be paired up. That's the wife of Steve Garvey, the famous baseball player for the L.A. Dodgers. And once again, lightning struck on the local level. What he did in Los Angeles, he did in New York. Once again, what was AM New York, then the morning show, became a smash. Several years later, after Cindy Garvey left and her other co-host Ann Arbor left, Regis Philbin and Kathy Lee Johnson and Kathy Gifford got together and they made magic. So much so that when ABC was acquired by Disney, the Buena Vista television subsidiary got them going in a live morning show, live with Regis and Kathy Lee. And it became a huge hit for 15 years. the same format that Regis Scoven developed in San Diego, the host chat, trivia, then guests, it all was magic. And the thing you got from Regis is that Regis was as unique a television animal as there ever was. He could respond to anything. He was unpredictable. You never knew where he was going to go with his host chat, where he was going to go with his co-hosts, and where he was going to go with his guests. Because he was just as good a listener as he was a conversationalist. Boy, he could get a word in edgewise. Lots of words edgewise. And the kind of rapport he had with his executive producer, Michael Gelman, and the rest of the crew at WABC-TV in New York, it was magical. And the great thing is that when Kathy Lee Gifford left to become co-host of the Today Show, well, didn't stop Regis. No going back. He hosted the show with a variety of co-hosts for several years. Then Kelly Ripa came, and boom, magic all over again. And the consistency in the ratings was tremendous. Talk shows was not the only thing that Regis Philbin was a comeback person on. Game shows also. In the 1970s, along with all sorts of things he was doing, appearing on all sorts of game shows, doing comedy bits, being on talk shows, etc., Regis did a game for ABC called The Neighbors. He was good, the show was not. Was bombed after 3 or 4 months. And then in 1999 came a hit from Great Britain that ABC wanted to use called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And ABC and Michael Davies, the executive producer, and Mark Gentile, the brilliant director, decided, let's go with Regis Philbin. Let's put him in those monochromatic suits, and let's let him have it with the contestants. And once again, television magic was made. The whole game show world went upside down. And the idea of a game show event taking place over several nights in New York, taped the night before each time, was thrilling. And, of course, there were all sorts of elements to making it work. The fastest finger question, the multiple choice answers, the lifelines, and Regis being just great with the contestants. And, of course, asking that immortal question, is that your final answer? Or, when someone went all the way, he just won $1 million! When John Carpenter won that for that Stock It to Me question with Nick is the answer, it was a television highlight for the ages. Regis Philbin really had one of the great comeback careers when it came to national television. And he was versatile. He did game shows, he did talk shows, he did sports. In fact, before he got into San Diego, he did a lot of work in other parts of the West Coast, and in fact, he did sports anchoring and was an anchor in news and a few other things, too. He was that versatile and, of course, had that great gift for gab. In fact, one of his last things was doing the Crowd Goes Wild series for nearly a year on Fox Sports 1, helping them get that service off the ground. Throughout it all, Regis had his wonderful wife, Joy. He had his apartment in New York City. And he had the respect and love of millions and millions of fans, not just in New York, but all over the country. For a lot of people, he was the ultimate New Yorker. He would be all over the place. And when he wasn't on his show, he'd be on David Letterman, or be on other talk shows, or other game shows, then out of New York. He'd have a blast. He'd also do pageants. He'd pop up on Daytime Emmy Awards. And he was his normal, unpredictable self. It's been a while since Regis has been on television on a regular basis. He gave up his D-time gig back, I think, like 2012, 2013. But he stayed in touch. He kept making guest appearances. And in fact, when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire came back earlier this spring, even with the coronavirus pandemic, Regis was there to wish Jimmy Kimmel well. And I'm sure that if Regis could get past his 89th birthday, that when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire comes back for a second season with Kimmel with the helm, that he would be back. In a way, Regis left quietly. He died of natural causes. He died peacefully. His family was with him. And he died, as I said, 1 month short of his 89th birthday. Regis was really the quintessential New Yorker, the quintessential comeback kid, and one of the greatest, most versatile personalities the TV ever had. And before we go, we should let you know also that along the way, he set the Guinness Book of World Records for the most hours logged by a television personality, over 17,000 hours. Yes, he did beat Hugh Downs in that accomplishment. What a man. Or as he would say, what a person! Reed, we'll miss you. We'll miss that spirit. We'll miss your camaraderie. We'll miss your sense of pride in what you do, the way you handle all sorts of guests, and how you handle Gelman, and Kathy Lee, and Kelly, and Cindy Garvey, and Mary Hart, and all your co-hosts. But most of all, we'll miss you. And there's no doubt about it that you are already the toast of heaven. And goodness knows what kind of television ventures you're going to be doing up there. But no more comeback stories. It's great from the get-go. Our second of three episodes of Tomorrow Be Televised this week, marking the end of our 13th year on the air, comes your way on Wednesday. That's Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, from the new Disney Channel movie, Upside Down Magic, premiering this Friday night. We'll have director Joe Nussbaum. From Medsign and the new world of telehealth on television, Chief Executive Officer Tom Conway. Plus, from the new TBS series, Lost Resort, Executive Producer Jessica Sebastian. And then we'll have another episode coming your way on Friday. And 1 week from Monday, we'll kick off year 14 with the Commissioner of the New York City Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, Anne Del Castillo. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up on episodes you missed all month long and all year long, go to our homepage and enjoy blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, we're available throughout the week on podcasts. That includes iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker Podcast app, TuneIn.com, and iHeartRadio.com. And with those last two websites, that's TuneIn.com and iHeartRadio.com, all you have to do is use the search bar, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the bar, click, and you'll get episodes right then and there. Well, let's get to our guests today, Brandy M. from P-Valley and Joel Cox from Strategist. Love to hear from you. Email me with your thoughts, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're from. Remember, if you want to be involved in our Classic Trivia Question of the Week, we'll give you the question one more time. Name Who's the Boss's theme song. If you know the answer, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Again, don't forget your name and where you're emailing from. First with the correct answer, you will win the TED book, How to Live on Mars by Stephen Petranek, and Discovery Channel's real-life sticker book, Ocean-Oriented, just in time for Shark Week, with more than 400 stickers. Great gift for you and your family. And if we don't get an answer by the end of the day, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon to WBT. And, of course, you can always communicate with me there. Tomorrow, Primetime Emmy Awards take place. Nominations tomorrow morning on Good Morning America at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time during that final half hour. That's 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, also 8:30 a.m. Pacific Time as well. And we love hearing from you. So communicate with us. As let you down just to say, we're in touch, so you'll be in touch. I do respond to your email within 24 hours. Remember, we love hearing from you because, always, what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate is Mandolin. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. The co-founders of this enterprise are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought today by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a one-month trial, audiobook, health and wellness information, and a whole much more, audibletrial.com/televised. But Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your day. And remember, if you're in a heat wave area, please, if you're going out today, take extra time, use mask stretch if you can, follow the health guidelines of wearing the mask and social distancing, check in your loved ones, drink plenty of fluids, particularly water, and we'll see you and hear you, hopefully, Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, or the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And whatever you are up to between now and Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, please make it safe and make it great. And yes, we are licking this pandemic once and forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.